Welcome to the inaugural session of Three Men and a Mic, the Northwest Missourians' weekly sports podcast. I'm Brandon Zenner, joined by sports editor Tyler Brown and news editor Chris Roush. Let's get right into it, guys. First, let's get started with some college football playoff. Tyler, what exactly did we see this week? When we came in, Oregon was not the underdog by any means, and they kind of got just manhandled by Ohio State.
Well, what we saw was total domination. Ohio State, whenever Cardale Jones came in, their offense completely changed, and obviously for the better. He can throw it downfield, and they have a good deep wideout. What's his name?
Devin Smith.
And, you know, he averages 28 yards a catch, so basically he doesn't catch it unless it is a long catch. And then once you have that going, then you hand the ball off to, Zeke, and the rest is history.
Yeah, I think what the other thing to bring up, too, is the how bad Oregon got beat off the line of scrimmage each play. I mean, offensively, Oregon, that the hurry-up offense would work, but Mariota didn't have much time in back in the pocket. He was under pressure. Ohio State's defensive front was manhandling the offensive line, and vice versa. I mean, they're getting Jones a lot of time to throw the football back there for Ohio State and opening up huge holes for Elliott to run through. So I think, really, Urban Meyer, I don't want to say he had his team more prepared than Elfridge did, but Ohio State really wanted that victory, and Oregon, they got punched in the mouth.
And it looked just like from the get-go that while this was, what, the 15th game on their slate for this season, that it didn't look like it was their 15th game. I mean, from the very beginning, they seemed to just out-muscle Oregon, and that's kind of how they got a lot of their victories, grinding them out. And then once it got later in the game, they were putting up points. And Tyler, to touch on it yesterday, Devin Smith averaged 45 yards a catch. He had one catch for 45 yards.
Right, but yeah, and for the season, miraculous. He averaged
28.2. So yeah, they got something special, something that definitely the Chiefs could use. But we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. And how would you guys talk about – how would you rank the success of this first college playoff?
Well, I'll start there on that one. And I wrote a column about it today, and I wrote that it was successful, but it was only successful because – the other one was so mightily unsuccessful. The old model was so bad. And this year was fun. It had us on the edge of our seats. It obviously worked because a four seed ended up winning the whole thing. But I don't think you can declare – they claimed it was the first true champion ever. I don't think we can declare that when you don't have all five power conferences involved. How can you justify leaving TCU out? You know, I would love to see it either go to six or eight.
I think it's going to go to an 8. I mean, I think this one's a lot better than what we've had in years past, because if it was last year, we would have had Florida State, Alabama. I mean, that game clearly was not going to be the best game. Ohio State really didn't make this game the best game either, so Ohio State proved they were the best team down the stretch, which also gives us more of an NFL feel, which you see teams get hot towards the end of the season in the NFL, and they keep the momentum going. Now that you have this playoff system in college football, if you expand this to 8, you have an 8 seed that really gets hot down towards the end of the season. They start steamrolling through the playoff picture in their first round game. You're going to have a team that could pull off a New York Giants in the NFL back in 2007 when they were the wild card team against New England. You can have teams like that in college football who are the complete underdogs at the 8 seed, 7 seed, and they could roll kind of like Ohio State did this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And going off of what Tyler said of how successful they're saying it was the first college football playoff under this new format, absolutely. But we can all agree that there's still work to be done. While it is better than anything we've ever had as far as determining a true champion in college football, they've had the BCS system, they've had determining it off the final AP poll, however it's been, there's still work to do. While all having those six games that they had on New Year's Day was amazing to watch, you had Baylor, Michigan State, which was an absolute shootout till the very end. Minnesota, Missouri, that was fun, but it really wasn't one of the final four games that we would have seen. What they need to do to look at, I believe, is those New Year's Day, you start games at 11 o'clock, you have those final four teams, and you have a game going each 3 hours. How fun of a New Year's Day would that be?
Oh, yeah.
With 12 hours of football. And it's all going towards who's going to be the national champion.
It really would be, and I would like to see it organized like this: the five champions get in of the Power Five, and then they have two at large, and then they have one mid major. So this year it would have been Boise State, and then the other two would have been Baylor and Mississippi State, although I would rather have seen Michigan State instead of Mississippi State.
Yeah, and that's interesting. I mean, if you look at it, the teams that would have gotten in last year, this year they were lucky. Alabama, if they would have slipped there late, the SEC wouldn't have had any teams get in. But last year would have had Florida State, Auburn, Alabama, and Michigan State based off of the final Week 16 polls before they went into the BCS system and everything. So it's interesting looking, especially at that, that there's all this talk about how the SEC is declining. Last year, we would have kind of seen a little bit of a different landscape than we did this year.
Yeah, and I think going back to both the ideas, there's so many ideas you can throw around of what to do with this system. Either, to me, they have the two options. They have the 8-team or somehow, which is, this is not going to happen, but you make a Power 4 conference. At this point, it's not going to happen anytime soon. You have the Power 4, instead of the Power 5. Each conference has 16 teams in it. I don't know which one you would dissolve, whether it be the ACC or the Big 12. To me, those are the two probably that get dissolved. They mesh with into another couple of conferences there. But you either go to the four conference champions, those are the top four, that's the playoff system, or you go to the eight. You don't go any farther than eight. It's just going to be long, drawn out, and there's just going to be too many teams involved. Kind of like the March Madness bracket is starting to turn into. You're having too many teams involved.
Yeah, 68 teams, I think we can all decide with that. 64 was a little bit much. We've never seen a one seed get upset by a 16 seed. With, like we saw with football, if you keep it minimalized, there's enough top teams at the top where it's going to have its effect no matter what. And then also, there's a lot of stuff brewing now with Ohio State with how much they came out and dominated. They were supposed to come into the year with Braxton Miller. He went down. JT Barrett, backup quarterback, came in, freshman, and he absolutely dominated until they got to the Big Ten championship. And here comes Cardale Jones, a third-string quarterback, and he just lit it up these last three games. While his numbers might not have been there, his passing percentages and whatnot, he was still an extremely effective quarterback, and they have all three of those guys coming back next year.
Not only was his numbers passing-wise may have not been slated too high, but that's because, you know, the running back clearly went off. But also his rushing yards went kind of underrated. He escaped. He kept escaping the pocket time after time. But you know what? If I'm Cardale Jones, I just had a kid 2 months ago. I'm going to the NFL. You know, he's eligible. He has a big arm. His stock is high. And, you know, like, teams take a chance on that.
And see, with Cardale Jones, for him right now, he says he's not NFL ready yet. But in the back of his mind, this is his best opportunity to go because you've played in three of the biggest games, the Big Ten Championship, the Sugar Bowl, and now the College Football Playoff Championship. Right there, you've won three big games. If you have an extra year to come back and hone your skills, so to speak, it could bite him. He could fall. Matt Barkley was a top 10 pick at one point. Barkley falls to the mid rounds because he came back. For Cardale Jones right now, there's three quarterbacks. Braxton, I think, is gone. I think he's transferring or he's leaving. I don't know for sure, but one of these guys is not staying. Right now, they're all saying they're staying. Competition is great, but one of these guys is leaving. And it may be Barrett, actually, because Barrett, they showed him on the sidelines after the game. It was a pouty look picture, but I don't think he was actually pouting. They may have caught him at the wrong time. One of these guys is leaving Ohio State.
Can we just process that for a second? Braxton Miller, besides Marcus Mariota and Melvin Gordon, Braxton Miller was arguably the best candidate to win the Heisman this year.
Oh, yeah.
And then he went down, and JT Barrett was a very, very well-qualified Heisman contender while he wasn't picked to go to New York ultimately. That's another story. But there's talks that one of them two might transfer, and they very well were close to being one of the best college football players this year. That's pretty miraculous what they got going up there.
Honestly, I could see just one of them sticking around. It wouldn't surprise me. You know, they're all worthy. They all want to start. And, you know, I'd probably bolt if I was one of them and I knew that I wasn't going to start.
Yeah, and then before we move on to our next topic, we're going to talk about the NFL playoffs here before the weekend gets started. I want to give a little shout-out to the Spoof Hounds. Ezekiel Elliott did not beat the Spoof Hounds. He might have gone off for more than 400 yards. but they did not let him win. So, good job to the Hounds. And then this weekend, we got a big, big weekend of some NFL playoffs going on. We got Brady, we got Rodgers, we got Andrew Luck dethroning Peyton Manning, and we got the return of Russell Wilson and the Seahawks, the defending champions. First, what are you guys' early picks for this weekend? What are you guys looking to see?
You know, I hate to, you know, stay inside the box, but I'm going Patriots and Seahawks. They both just seem unbeatable right now, and I really want to see that game.
Well, I really, really just want to see Andrew Luck finally break the Colts back through. While Peyton Manning, he got them to the playoffs so many times, just as he has the Broncos ever since he's been there. He was only able to deliver one championship there. And the Colts, while they were fortunate enough, I wouldn't really say they're fortunate because they went through three miserable seasons there. They got Andrew Luck, who's we can all agree that he's one of the top quarterbacks in the league, and definitely one of the top quarterbacks that is under the age of like 27 or 28. To see him and Russell Wilson dueled out, it would really show a change of the regime. As much as we all have to have respect for Tom Brady and especially what Aaron Rodgers is doing. Russell Wilson, Andrew Luck would kind of show a changing of the guard at the quarterback position in the NFL.
Well, I think regardless, I think right now it is Aaron Rodgers' regime. You know, he's only like 30. But Andrew Luck, in comparison to Peyton Manning, he's just more of a playoff-style quarterback. You know, a lot of these passers who, you know, run the spread the whole game, they haven't had a great track record as far as postseason go because, you know, the bind that it puts the defenses in and whatnot. And Andrew Luck, he just always checks down to the right thing. He can throw it. He knows when to, you know, hand the ball off and whatnot.
I think when you look at Andrew Luck, I think this past weekend the torch was passed from Peyton Manning to Andrew Luck. You saw Manning was not the Manning of old. He wasn't the Manning of last year.
He might not even be coming back.
No, Manning has fallen off the last several weeks. He may have had a thigh injury. Andrew Luck, he had two turnovers, but they were on third and long situations. Basically, they were 35-plus yard punts that they turned out to be. Luck, he's going to take risks. He's going to have turnovers. He throws the ball. He tries to make plays. He's kind of a Brett Favre-type mentality. Not as big of a gunslinger as Favre is because Favre wasn't afraid to throw back across his body, across the field. But you have Andrew Luck, who's not afraid to make plays. His interceptions are high. But he's not willing to just sit back, and he will check it down, yes, but he's not going to just be Alex Smith, like, cautionary every play. Luck's willing to go out there on a whim and just see if anything happens. And then for this weekend, I think it's going to be the Patriots, and if Aaron Rodgers is healthy, I'm going to take Green Bay over Seattle. Seattle's defense, yes, I know, the best in the league. I think the second time this year these two teams will play, I think Rodgers, if fully healthy, we'll get the better of Seattle this weekend.
Seattle's just like one of those Ohio State teams. I feel like they just have that muscle. Mm-hmm. And any time that they get doubted, I mean, just like Ohio State just proved. I always want to see Seattle lose. I don't know what it is about them. I mean, I have all the respect for their players. A lot of them are guys that weren't big coming out of college, and they've made it for themselves. Great coaching up there by Pete Carroll. But it's just one of the teams that I always want to see lose, and it just never happens. They just have too much wit. They're too fundamentally sound, especially that Legion of Boom, by golly. And both those teams, actually Seattle and New England, both the home teams are opening up at a touchdown favorites this weekend. So it looks like Vegas is definitely pulling for the home teams and the number one seeds.
I do not see Green Bay winning simply because of the fact of how hurt Aaron Rodgers looked last week, and Seattle's defense, as we just touched on, is no joke. But Green Bay could barely escape from a Cowboys defense who's average at best, and the Seahawks in Seattle, I just think that's a completely different animal.
I agree with that too. I just think that you touched on it earlier, Tyler, that this is Aaron Rodgers' league right now. He's the best quarterback in the league. Tom Brady's right up there. Andrew Luck's right up there with him. Drew Brees, I don't know what happened. Brees kind of fell off, but it's Rodgers' league, but the defense is strong. I don't think it's going to be a pretty ball game. I think Green Bay, their defense, they can come to play. They can make plays on defense. They're not a great defense. They can make plays. Seattle's defense against Rodgers, and you have Randall Cobb, Jordy Nelson. The weapons are there. It's going to be ugly. I think there's going to be some turnovers by Rodgers, but in the long run, I just see somehow he's going to be able to make that fourth quarter rally, whether they're down three, down seven, and make that fourth quarter comeback.
Yeah, absolutely. And how about that Dez Bryant catch? What is your guys' thought on that rule? While the way that the rule is set up, it should not have been a rule to catch, but the rule...
Well, the rule had an exception in it, right? If you make a football a move common to the game, then it is a catch, right? Isn't that what they said?
Yeah, it's supposed to.
Okay, and I saw him make two steps after he caught it and reach towards the goal line. And I believe that's a move common to the game and a move that he commonly makes every week.
See, I think the issue with that, the first part, is I think it's a catch, but Shields tipped the ball enough on his first step, I think, knocked it loose. But once he dove, I think that's a football move. The issue with this, quote, football move, same thing with the targeting rule. How do you determine what's a football move? How do you determine what's a targeting call, unless it's completely obvious? The rule, they got the call correct. Mm. If they're going to have the rule, they made the correct call. It's not a good call. Dallas feels they were screwed out of that one. Well, Detroit feels the same way 2 weeks ago. The rules are there. The NFL's had a lot of scrutiny this year off the field with their handling of Ray Rice, Adrian Peterson, the domestic violence. Now they're having issues on the field with a lot of these rules. Should they be here? Is it too strict on some of these things? Is it over the top? Are they just monitoring too much? And also these officiating crews, some of them haven't worked together. I mean, you have a lot of issues coming together for the NFL, and they better straighten it out, or a couple years down the road, they could be in some serious trouble.
Yeah, and again, this weekend is one that even maybe the Chiefs should be paying a lot of attention to. As we know, there's a lot of wide receivers coming out from the draft class that are playing still, that are going to be free agents. Randall Cobb, this weekend he's still going to be playing. He's going to be a free agent this offseason. Dez Bryant and Demaryius Thomas, they're not in anymore. But they're going to be free agents. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see Dez back in Jerry World, though. And you go down the list, Jeremy Maclin, Torrey Smith, Michael Crabtree. I mean, there's probably 11, 12 guys that could come into a Chiefs offense and be number one. I mean, you got Nate Washington, Cecil Shores. I mean, there's a lot of guys. And while we're on this topic, why don't we just jump into it? I mean, the Chiefs got a lot of contract issues that they needed to get settled.
Well, another guy, I'm not sure if he's on that list you're looking at, but I thought I heard that Wes Welker was a free agent.
Yes, he is.
And I'm aware that he's a little over the hill, but how nice would he fit in? I could just see him being Alex Smith, you know, blanket out there, you know, making third down catches, just getting first downs, and you could probably get him for a bargain. Another thing I would like to see the Chiefs do is, I'm definitely in the minority here, but I don't want them to cut Dwayne Bowe if they don't have to. I would, if he is willing to take a pay cut, which he's going to have to take if we cut him anyway, because no team's going to give him that much money, I think Dwayne Bowe would be one of the best number two wide receivers in the league.
And with Bowe, my issue with Bowe is he thinks he's a number one. He's not a number one. If he'll take the pay cut, fine. He's got to take the pay cut. If not, you have to cut him. I don't think you can keep him. Because it's a black hole right now at wide receiver. Anything that goes their way, they either drop or Smith underthrows it. There's just a lot of issues through there. Going back to all the free agents, Dallas is probably going to be willing to spend a little bit if they have the salary cap room. They just locked up, according to Ian Rappaport and Chris Mortensen, they reported. 5 years, $30 million for Jason Garrett. He's going to make around $6 million. So they're locking up their head coach. Dez Bryant's not going anywhere. Denver, though, could be losing some receivers. Their salary cap won't be able to hold Demaryius Thomas, Wes Welker, and a lot of the issues they have. If Manning takes up $19, $20 million, Denver's wide receiving core will dwindle. I don't think Randall Cobb will leave, but
their whole offense is in flux, the Denver.
Yeah.
I mean, they got two free agent wide receivers. They don't know. I mean, John Elway is like, it's all up to him. We want him back.
They got John Fox gone now. Peyton Manning might be walking out the door. I mean, and Denver wasn't their offensive line the one where they barely have stayed the same throughout the whole season?
Yeah, I mean, regardless, if Peyton comes back, in my opinion, this division is up in the air for the first time in 5 years.
And as you talked about with Wes Welker, We kind of have already had that same player in D'Anthony Thomas. I think D'Anthony Thomas has a lot of potential. He's really quick on the ball, and he showed a lot of explosive speed, especially on those returns. I do think that would be a nice addition, though.
Wes Welker, his difference between him and D'Anthony Thomas is just he's a really good route runner, and he would just give that veteran savviness that we – don't have right now in a possession receiver.
Yeah, he can work more out of the slot, whereas D'Anthony, a lot of his stuff comes on a lot of move and a lot of stuff coming out of the backfield. So definitely see what you're saying. And then on the defensive side of the ball, we have an issue here where they need to lock up Justin Houston. And Tomba Hawley, there's stuff up in the air. Are they going to let him go? If so, possibly move D Ford into a full position there, maybe try to get someone else to compliment Dontari Poe on that line. They got some questions in safety. What are they going to do with Eric Berry and his lymphoma?
I think I think they put him on the PUP list. I think they had something worked out through the NFL with Berry that don't want to cut him.
Yeah, it's insurance.
Yeah, they can make that move with him. I don't want him to touch the defensive line or offensive line early in the draft because it bothers me every year. They go anywhere near the offensive line. That hasn't worked in 30 plus years that they've been doing it. Now they've had Hall of Fame offensive line, yes. But kind of going to the Tomba Hawley that Brandon, you brought up, I think he's gone. I think he's done. D Ford will move out to Hawley's spot. I think they're comfortable with that at this point. You'll have Houston and Ford, because if Houston, they want to sign him instead of getting the franchise on him, because that's going to, I don't remember how much. It's going to be about what? $18 million?
He said he'll hold out if he gets that too. I mean, my thing, first of all, Tomba, that kills every Chiefs fan inside a little bit. He's been the heart and soul along with DJ, and we don't know what's going to happen with DJ neither, because, that's a hard thing to come from, especially with how old he is. I think he's 33, 34. But I was reading an article by Adam Teicher, and he had said that we can't afford a wide receiver like Jeremy Maclin without cutting Tomba. And so, obviously wide receiver is the greater need at this time with D Ford ready to take the reins.
And when you not waste, because I think D Ford does have potential. He showed it at some times this year, even if he didn't really put up the stats. I think he can work himself into that system. There comes a time when your first round picks have to produce. If not, we need to ship them off, and you have to restart. It sucks because that's Chiefs fans. That is what we have gone to live by with all of these first round picks that we've spent on the defensive line that are no longer here, the offensive line. So whether it is sending out one of our veterans like Tomba, who a lot of people in Kansas City love. It's time for these younger players to start standing up and producing too. And then while we're talking about the youth, let's move over to the Royals, which the youth is really something that we saw a lot in this Royals, and it seems that Ned Yost has that clubhouse down pat. And Ned Yost signed a contract extension today with the Royals. He's going to be here now through 2016. Well, what does this mean for the Royals organization?
I think that's the window. That's the window of winning. I think Dayton Moore's got 2 years left. He's 2016. Ned Yost, 2016. Alex Gordon's 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Moustakas and Hosmer arbitration's coming up. More for Hosmer than it is Moustakas. Mm-hmm. Moustakas' arbitration won't be that expensive.
So you think 26? You say 2016 is the window. So if they don't win it all by then, you think they're gonna turn back to the old Royals and ship everybody out?
I don't think they'll do that. I just think that's the. See, this is what makes it difficult, because they did get there this year with no one thinking they were going to go that far. By June, I was like, here we go again. Same thing. And for them to do that, I think they're going to have confidence this year. I don't think it's going to be as good of a season, obviously. It's hard to repeat.
I don't think it will either, but on paper it is. I think they're just as good on paper as they were last year.
Right, I think they are too. I think it's going to come down to, is Hosmer going to hit like he did down the stretch? Is Moustakas going to have the power down the stretch and be consistent all year?
Yeah, it lies at the hands of those two, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that and the with the youth, I mean, we've talked – one of the big things that was talked about by all Royals fans last year is how miraculous that bullpen goes. They retained everybody And so along with Chris talking about that window, it really is there because you can only – while we thought either Holland, Davis, or Herrera was going to be getting shipped out this year, with them holding on to it and giving Ned Yost this contract extension, I think they're really laying it down, saying that we have a little bit of time to do this. It's obviously not going to last forever. You're not going to be able to go 7, 8, 9 with the same three people for 4 or 5 years. So I totally agree with you on that, Chris.
What's hilarious to me is in the seventh inning of the Oakland game, everyone was calling for his head.
Rightfully so. I don't think you put your Donovan Ventura in that situation. Now, Ventura proved us all wrong down the stretch.
Right.
How good of a pitcher he is, because at that point, why do you put the 22-year-old in that situation and he just gets shelled? And if Moore would have fired Yost right then and there in that seventh inning, I think Yost
got be talking about this.
Yost got a lot of breaks, I think, in the postseason. Some of his moves, bringing in Frazier, bringing in guys that you're like, why are we bringing them at this point? They played well. They bailed Yost out a few times in the postseason. They went to Game 7. They lost to Madison Bumgarner, is basically the best way to put it. I think with this team, Holland, I think, has got 1 year left. Or if the season's going down quickly by July, I see Holland being dealt. Because you still have to be playing for the playoffs, but you can't not look ahead. Philadelphia Phillies are a good example of not looking ahead. They are old and washed up, and they didn't look ahead. They're going for the World Series year after year. They didn't ever look ahead. They got themselves in a bind with everybody being over 35 eventually. So I think Holland's probably the first trading piece to go out of everybody on that roster. Holland first, and then they'll move Davis into that slot, I think.
Yeah, what of just what you said. I mean, it's all going to require – it's all going to rely on these guys that have been here for a while. While we don't – we brought in these – our free agent prospects, we're kind of taking gambles on, because Alex Rios, he's getting up there. I mean, we know he can produce, but it's really going to be up in the air. And then who was the other guy that we signed?
Morales.
Yeah, Kendrys Morales. He didn't have it last year. He said it was all his timing was bad. He was coming back from an injury. Ned and Dayton are saying they're loving what they're seeing out of him. Kendrys seems really confident. So it's going to be relying a lot on these guys. Hosmer, he showed it all throughout the postseason. Moustakas definitely showed it throughout the postseason. It's going to be relying on those guys. We already know we're going to be able to count on Salvi and Alex Gordon. They produce. That's not a problem. So it's going to be relying on these guys that we brought in. And
Lorenzo Cain, too.
Lorenzo Cain. How he did not get a Golden Glove is beyond me.
But. Not only that, no one talks about his bat. He hit, over 300.
Yeah.
He did.
Escobar's about 300. Escobar's about 300, and I don't know if Escobar will be back at 300 again.
No, but Escobar, the year before last year, he batted awful. But the year before that, he was over 300 as well. I mean, he
may settle into a 280.
Yeah.
270, 280, which is fine for a Gold Glove shortstop.
And the fact that where,
like him.
The fact that where Moose was, what, two and a half months into the season – what he
you
know,
triple A.
Yeah, exactly. He went back up to Omaha, and his batting average was way down there. And for him to rebound like he did, he didn't get enough credit the last couple months of the season, because he was doing really good, and then he showed it in the postseason. You guys have any last thoughts?
If he hits 220 and hits a lot of home runs, 25, 30, then I think that's the player that he is. I think that's who he is. That's his max potential.
That's kind of my mentality, too. And then if Salvador Perez can just stop swinging at anything that comes in 12 feet of the plate, which I think they'll correct with this offseason, but if Perez can start hitting 15 home runs and be the glove he is, they can go back to the playoffs. It's just going to come down to everything clicking again like it did last year.
White Sox are greatly improved, but to be honest with you, I think the Tigers are a little overrated at this point, and I think it's the Royals division.
So we've talked a little about the NFL. We've gotten into the first college playoff. Now we're joined by Northwest's very own Deshaun Cooper over in Germany. Deshaun, how's it going tonight?
It's going good. It's going good. Just sitting back, relaxing.
How you like living in Germany so far?
I like it. I like it. The people here, they show a lot of respect. They show love. So wherever I get love at, I enjoy it.
So coming out of Northwest, I mean, obviously, for any college athlete, wanting to continue at the next level is a big deal and something that a lot of people dream of. What was that like for you after college? What was the process like to figuring out you were going to go over to Germany? And then how's it been so far?
The process, it was very unexpected. Like, everything was new. So you were just going in basically like I had a blindfold on. I didn't know anything. But if I was to give any pointers or anything, I would just say just enjoy the moment and just go with the flow and make the best of any situation that you get yourself in. And that's what I did, and I'm enjoying it 100%.
And we had a story this week about how McCollum, he got his 100th win, and one of the reasons he got into coaching is he really wanted to give back to the kids. And it seems like he's got these guys over here, and he has throughout his time. He has a really good chemistry with his players. Will you talk a little bit about the effect that McCollum had on you and kind of any lessons you learned at Northwest that still carry over with you today?
Yeah, he taught me how to work hard. I mean, he's a player's coach. Like, he actually takes the time out of his day to get to know you. If you have a problem, you can go talk to him about it. I mean, he's a friend. He's not just your coach. He looks out for you in school, and he looks out for you on the basketball court. And when you are a player, you want a person like that in your corner to lead you. He's a true leader. And when you have him in your corner, you follow him, and he will lead you in the right direction.
Hey, Deshaun, it's Tyler here.
What up, Tyler?
Have you been keeping track of Northwest basketball much this season?
Yeah, I've been keeping track. I watched a few games.
What did you think of Justin Pitts whenever he was on the scout team last year? You know, he's probably guarding you. How did that go in practice?
I always knew Justin Pitts had game. I always knew that just from when we practiced with him all year last year. But I just knew coming into this year he was going to be ready to explode just by having that redshirt year, just sitting out and being away from basketball. When you sit out that long, you miss the game. And once he gets back into the game, you'll see some things you never seen before just by from his emotions and the way that he plays the game.
There were kind of some – the expectations weren't too great coming into this season for Northwest basketball. What did you think? Obviously, you and, Starzl, you guys all departed. What did you think was left behind for this team? What did you think the process would that be?
A winning mentality. That's what we left when we were there. It's all about winning. And when we left, it was for them to take the next step. We got back to the NCAA playoffs. We got back to the conference championship. Now it's time for them to go win it. Now it's time for them to take that extra step. We know what it took to get to where we were. So now we know what it takes to get to where we want to go. And that's what we left for them, and they are doing it the right way, I feel.
DeJohn, this is Chris here. And going back to Germany and your transition over there, what was that like for you? Obviously, different language, new culture. How hard was that for you to transition into that lifestyle?
I mean, it wasn't too hard because I had basketball. Like, that's what I came over here to do. And basketball is basketball, no matter if you play it in Europe or South Africa, it doesn't matter. You have the same rim and you have the same length of the court. So once I had that as my outlet, the other things just came with it, and I just took it as it came.
And we saw early in the season, I haven't been able to check on it lately, but you were one of the top scoring players so far this season. Talk a little bit about that, what it's been like.
It's been pretty good. I mean, it's been a learning experience. We had, like, everything, like, my team that I'm on, everything is new. Like, the coach is new, the league that we're in is, everybody that we have on our team is new. So it's just a new learning process, and my objective was to win and to play my best like I do every game, and that's what I'm going to keep doing.
And how much of a connection do you have with these guys off the court?
The connection, it's not as strong because this is our first year ever playing together. So I still don't know how some of the players, you know, want the ball or where they want it because this is my first year ever seeing them. So when you get to know players, it takes a lot of time, and we haven't had that much time. So I'm still finding and still learning things about these players.
How would you rank or assess how you've done this season compared to what you wanted to accomplish?
I did all I could possibly do, because when you get to the professional level, you have to consider a whole a lot of other things than when you're at a college level, because you have to think about the president of the club. You have to think about the GM, the management, what kind of players they want. You have to think about how much money the club has. It's a lot of other things that come into play that I really have no control over. So I just go with it.
What are the big differences between playing over here and then the international style of basketball? Is there that big difference that some people talk about, or is it really relatively the same speed, same tempo?
Yeah, I would say it's more of the same speed, but over here it's a lot more fundamental. Like, you don't see as much, like, athleticism that you would see in America, but over here you see a lot more fundamental things, like the Tim Duncans and things like that.
Okay.
I remember before you left, I wrote a story on you, and during that interview, you said you were anxious, or you had heard about some of the, like, different rules that they have over there. Like, you said you could slap a ball off the rim or something like that.
Yeah.
What other rules were there that different that have been a big deal?
It's a couple traveling rules that you can get away with in America, but they consider it traveling over here. I mean, it's hard to explain over the phone. I would have to show you the actual move, but that's about it.
You get caught for that one
a
lot?
Other than that,
you can hear you. You get caught for traveling a lot?
yeah, it's more of a fast break. Like, when you're in a fast break and you catch the ball and you're about to take off, yeah, they call it travel for some reason. Like, if you take a step and then dribble, you have to put the ball directly down. And that's something that I had to adjust to when I got over. I got caught for traveling a couple times with that.
So have you been able to, you know, spend much time outside of basketball? How's the, you know, the nightlife in Germany and things like that?
Oh, yeah, I have a lot of time, because I only have practice once a day, and it's at night. So the whole day I have to myself to either work out or go to the city, you know, go to a club or anything. I mean, it's pretty good, because It's things that I haven't seen before, and it's new experiences. So I'm just enjoying every moment that I have.
Whenever you go out, is that usually with your teammates, or have you met friends outside of the team?
No, I go out with my roommate. Not much of the team.
How'd you meet your roommate?
How did I meet him?
Yeah, how do you know him?
Oh, he's from St. Louis. I actually brought him with me.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
How about that? What?
Yeah, it was a weird situation, because they asked me, did I know of any other players who could play professional, and I recommended him, and they actually signed him.
Wow.
That's one way to make it.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
What would you say is the one thing about either Maryville or America that you miss the most over there?
Man, the fans. I miss the fans. I've been there for 5 years, and when you build a chemistry with the aura of the city like that, you miss it when you're away from it. So I just miss the people and the vibe of Maryville. I mean, that's my second home.
And you bring up the crowd and the fan interaction up here in Maryville. What's kind of the following or the crowds and the fans you have over there in Germany for the team and basketball in general? What's the feeling like over there?
Oh, it's great. Like, they support basketball a lot. Like, you have many different leagues over here, and the league that I'm in is not really a top league. But the fans that we have, the fan base that we have, is great for what we have. Like, they support us every game. They're there. They're cheering their hearts out. I mean, they really show love. And when you have fans that are like that, you have no choice but to give it your all while you're out there on the court.
How much longer till the season is over?
The last game of the regular season is March 7th, but if we make the playoffs begin that following weekend.
So then,
it could go all the way to May if we make it to the championship.
So then what's your plans after that?
My plans is to go back to America, and then I will weigh out my options to see where I will play next.
So We talked a little bit about Maryville. How much of a connection do you still have with your friends, whether they're from other teams, and as well as your teammates back here?
Oh, I still talk to Coach Mack on a regular basis. I talk to him every week. I still talk to Bryson almost every week. Like I still talk to a lot of people from Maryville. So I still have that connection. And once I'm back in America, I will take a visit back to Maryville.
We'll make sure to let everybody hear that one. And so when you come back to America, what do you want to do next?
What would I want to do when I come back to America?
Yeah.
the first thing I would probably do, I would say, is probably go to IHOP. I need some breakfast food.
I was going to guess Chipotle.
Oh, Chipotle?
If you had a preference of where you would play next, you were just talking about you're going to decide where you play next. What would that be if you had your preference, or what would your choices most likely be?
My preference, I would say, as long as it's a level up, as long as I keep moving forward instead of staying the same or backwards, is wherever it is, as long as I'm moving up, I'll be happy. I really don't have a preference. Basketball is basketball. I'm just going with the flow and living out the experiences.
So one last question. Okay. Tell everybody here in Maryville, how are the Bearcats going to finish this season?
How are they going to finish the season?
Yeah, how are they going to finish?
Predictions.
I'm not accepting nothing but a national championship. That's the goal. That's the objective of it all.
All right. So, yeah, we're still here with DeShawn Cooper. We are going to get into our weekend picks now. This weekend we got a big, big weekend of football playoffs for the NFL. We got the conference championships on the line. So we got Green Bay at Seattle. Seattle's giving 7 points. Chris, who you got?
I'm still going with Green Bay. I think Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers, I think even a unable to move Aaron Rodgers will still be able to dissect defenses. I think Rodgers is still going to lead Green Bay past Seattle.
Also, you're going to put one between 1 and 10 points on it. How many are you putting?
I'll put 7 on Green Bay.
So if he wins, he's going to get 7 points. He loses, he's going to lose 7 points. We're going to keep track of these throughout each week and throughout the whole season, all semester. And each week, the loser, they have a wager that they're going to have to put on social media. So we'll make sure to get the wagers out to the fans. So, Tyler, let's hear your pick, Green Bay at Seattle.
I'm also taking Green Bay. I'm not taking Green Bay in the game. I think Seattle's going to win the game, but it will be a close game. I'm going to take Green Bay for 5.
Deshaun, what you got?
I'm going to go with Seattle. I'm going to have to switch it up. I'm going to go with Seattle, and I'll put 4 points on Seattle.
Hey, me and Deshaun, they say great minds think alike. I'm going to go with Seattle for 4. I think Russell Wilson, Beast Mode, they're going to step up, and they're going to hold Jordy Nelson down in that Legion of Boom. So I got Seattle for 4 as well. Indianapolis at New England. We got New England was 7-point favorite. Who you got, Tyler?
New England 7-point favorite. I'm going to have to go with New England. I think it'll be a 10-point ball game. And I'm going to put 6 points on it.
Yeah, we got 6 points for Tyler. What about you, Chris?
Yeah, I'll take New England. I'm going to put 4 on it, though.
Deshaun?
I'm going to have to go with the luck, man. I want to see some new history made, so I'm going to have to go with luck, and I'll put 3 points on
him. You know, if that happens, Deshaun, it'll be two 2012 drafted quarterbacks. The reins will be taken over by the young guns.
Oh, yeah.
And twice as nice. I'm sticking with the 2012 draft class just like Deshaun is. I think Andrew Luck, T.Y. Hilton. Hey, and Tyler's over here making faces because he just knows he knows he's gonna be putting a picture of him wearing a Royals T-shirt on social media this weekend. But I am going to go Indianapolis for 7. Now,
ooh, wow.
we got a big weekend of NBA games. We got the Warriors in action. We got the Bulls in action at home. We also got a big weekend of college basketball. I'm gonna kick things off. For our locks of the week, my lock of the week is going to be Louisville over Duke. Duke is struggling right now. They just lost at home. I got Louisville at home, moving to 4-1 in the ACC, and I'm going to put 6 points, 6 points on the sixth-ranked team in the country. What are you thinking this week, Chris?
I'm going to take Iowa State over Kansas. I'm going to go that as the lock of the week. Give me 2 points on Iowa State over Kansas.
Let's hear your thoughts, Deshaun.
I haven't seen none of these teams play. So I'm going to have to go with Coach K just because he's a great coach, and I would love to play for him. So I'm going to have to rock with Coach K over whoever.
We got Duke at Louisville. How many points you putting on Duke then?
I put two. I'll go with the ultimate two.
Okay. What we got, Tyler?
My lock of the week is going to go for the Bulls over the Hawks. I think the Hawks have been riding the high wave. I think that they haven't played a solid defense like the Bulls yet. I'm taking them to Chicago.
The highway don't stop at Chicago, Tyler. I'm sorry to hear that. All right, Deshaun, thanks for joining us, man. We appreciate it.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, take care, man.
I tell everybody in Maryville I said what's up.
We'll do good luck the rest of the season, buddy.
Yeah, good luck. We'll keep in touch with you.
I appreciate it.
Bye. All right, another big, big thanks to Deshaun Cooper all the way from Germany calling into the show today. For Chris Roush and Tyler Brown, I'm Brandon Zenner. This is Three Guys and a Mic.